The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle. Because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider. And also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Here it is, man. Another part of this thing. And let's start working on our identity, right? Identity in these things like this, this comes about, and coaches said, but it don't really come to life until you turn the tape on. Cool! Young way, right? It don't come to life till you start working on this stuff and you start to do it yourself, right? But I want this to be a competitive, I want this to be about tough, and I want this to be about a physical football team. And let the results find out where they go. Let them land where they may. Hey, amen. We're going to get everything out of every single player in here. I don't give a f- who you are. I'm going to find out what you can do and how you can do it and see if it can work in the National Football League on our team or somebody else's. Like, that is my goal, for everybody in this room to collect a paycheck somewhere in the National Football League. This is the vision. This is what we sold. This is the plan. As players, now it's on you. How close can we get in this room? How close can we become? How much further can we go? How much more of a leader can you be, AJ? How much more vocal can you be? How can we do it, Koo, all together? Because I believe this in my whole heart of everything. Hustling, right? Hustling. It is the first thing that we have to do. It has to be our foundation. We got to outrun the South. Right? Let's be real. We got to outrun the South. We win the South, we go to the playoffs. You get in the playoffs, you don't know what the f*** can happen. You just don't. Anything. Right? Hustling precedes everything. Is everybody with me? Break it up, men.
Look here, man, I might not be welcome in New Orleans for saying this, and this is awfully disrespectful to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I was already high on the Falcons given what they did this offseason. After watching Roz's speech at that team meeting to start the offseason program, the Falcons about to outrun the South. Give me the Falcons in the NFC South. You know what? And I got to contain myself from picking them to go all the way to the Super Bowl. I'm telling you, man, like, that got me so fired up. I wanted to run through a wall from Connecticut for Ra after that. And I love this story, and I'm so happy for him. And you know this, we've talked about it before. Like, he talked in that video about identity. And what that's a guy that's a leader of men, but that's also a guy who, and it's so important, so underrated, and it's the thing that you can't really tell that owners, this is one of the big reasons why owners and teams miss on coaches, because they can't really tell what that person is like other than anecdotally or from testimonies from maybe, you know, colleagues or players or what have you. But until you see it, you don't really know what that person is like in front of a room full of men. You know, and can they command a room? Can they command respect the way Raheem Morris clearly can? But that word identity, I kept thinking about him. And he's exactly what I said the Falcons and other teams should be looking for. Because too often they go for the guy, and he did a fantastic job with that young Rams defense last year. But too often they want the hot guy. They want the next wunderkind. They want the 33-year-old Raheem Morris that got the job in Tampa back in the day, succeeding John Gruden. They want the next big thing. They want somebody on the offensive side of the ball. They want a quarterback whisperer. They think they know what they want. They want the person that the media is trumpeting. You know, the Ben Johnsons, no disrespect, you know, perfectly qualified, but the person whose name is on the lips of analysts all the time, as opposed to
and
the offense. Coach who went through – and specifically
and
offense.
And a lot of times, offensive players.
Right, I was gonna say, that's what I said. Right. That's why I said quarterback whisper. But like, instead of the guy who went through it to get to it, you know, Raheem Morris, when you watch him just now, what you see is the guy, you see the guy. And I was just reading, I think Golong had an interview with Herm Edwards. You see the guy who was at Hofstra asking Herm Edwards to mentor him. You see the guy who worked under John Gruden and Mike Shanahan and Sean McVay. You see the guy who's been who's close friends with Mike Tomlin. You see the guy who has worked on both sides of the ball. You see the guy who was the interim head coach in Atlanta when Arthur Blank said if he went undefeated, he can get the job or get serious consideration. Life comes full circle. Life is funny this way. You see the guy who's just been through so much and knows who he is, knows how he wants to communicate with his players, knows how he wants his organization to look based on the organizations that he's been a huge part of, the places he's experienced success, and the places he's experienced failure. This is such a great, not just football story for the Falcons and for the NFL, but a great life story. Like, 48-year-old Raheem Morris, who's been through these storms and weathered these storms, and how much more prepared he is now than somebody, an offensive genius, an offensive mastermind, so to speak, who's never been a head coach or who's only experienced success. You know, that's the other thing about, we often talk about, like, why so many of Bill Belichick's Patriots assistants never worked out, or for the most part never worked out. Could it be because they only knew not just the Patriot way, but one way, and that's a winning way? Do they truly know how to handle real adversity? You know what I'm saying? Like, or is it like trading places and you know, and then Lewis Winthrop III trying to learn how to live poor, you know, when they go somewhere else trying to rebuild it from the ground up? Just a theory, but give me a coach that's got scars. Give me a coach that's been through it to get to it. Give me a coach like Raheem Morris who knows who he is and who's learned from so many people and learned from mistakes, learned from trial and error. I'm so fired up about the Falcons, in case you couldn't tell, Michael.
I can tell. I can tell. And you know, there are a couple of things. Let me just temper your enthusiasm just a little bit, and say that we always make fun of teams. And by me, by we, I mean you. Because I came out a couple of weeks ago wearing my Philadelphia Eagles T-shirt. And you're like, oh, they won the, you know, they won the offseason. They won the press conference. Oh, that's what you got. That's what you got. You're wearing your T-shirt. Yeah. So He won the first meeting. So Raheem Morris wins the first meeting. And you're like, oh, here we go.
Falcons going to the Super Bowl.
I'm taking the Falcons. Who's this? Hey, he shouted out a lot of people. I enjoyed it. He shouted out Grady Jarrett. Hey, Gary, Grady, he's done so much for Atlanta. His mama got commercials. Boy got commercials. Mama's got commercials. Family got commercials. Hey, good job. We're trying to, I love what you're doing. And he shouted, AJ, everybody, coaches. He made a reference to Kirk Cousins. But that's your quarterback? Oh, okay. If that's going to get you over the top, Kirk Cousins, you need a lot more in Atlanta. You need a lot more to bring that whole thing together. And
I think it's safe to say he's an upgrade. Safe to say he's at least at minimum an upgrade, a significant upgrade, provided he's healthy. They got that going for us, right?
You're in the backyard in the South. You're like, yeah, you've got to run the South. I like it. I like all this stuff. We got to run the South, make the playoffs. You know, win a division,
make the
playoffs.
You don't know what the fuck could happen.
You don't know what the fuck could happen. Okay, I like it. But you just happen to be in the same division as the three-time defending champion Tampa Bay Buccaneers, who ran it back, got it all coming back, got Baker Mayfield and Mike Evans and Godwin and everybody else coming back, got their head coach Todd Bowles, who's been through something himself.
Yes.
And who's had some success himself.
Yes.
So I like it. It's good content. I'm not sure
it's great content.
If it translates to division.
You're not believing the hype? Listen, on paper, and I know they don't play it on paper, but on paper, this team looks good. And they got the ninth pick? No, sorry, that's the Bears. They got the 10th pick. Or is that the Jets? Where did the Falcons pick?
No, the Jets have said pick.
Is it? Jets have to. You Falcons pick eighth? I'm all over the place this morning. I think Falcons pick eighth. They somewhere up in there. Okay, they got a high, they got a pretty high pick. They got a good shot at getting a blue chip prospect.
And we got relationships. I got relationships with everybody. I'm talking about Arthur Blank. I'm talking about Terry. I'm Bijan.
Come on, man.
I'm talking to everybody. Hey, what?
When a Kirk coach
Cousins,
tells me,
Kirk Cousins.
I'm trying to get you paid. Listen, man, like you got jokes. When a coach tells me I'm trying to get you paid here or somewhere else, I got you, dude. Whatever you say. Because I just tell, and he even, and when we didn't play, he talked about how mental health is real, okay? And that they're going to be available to them and make resources available to them to support them, not just professionally, but also personally. He talked about, hey, just like we call you out when you're not playing good football, call us out when we're not doing. Yeah. I mean, how do you not respond to a guy like
goes,
that? How do you
note it? Noted. I got you, player. I sure will. Week four and five. We got you. I'm ready to go. But look, man, I'm excited about it. I like the content as well. I'm just not sure about the Falcons in this division. I think they are, I mean, they're competitive, but I still think they're looking up at Tampa Bay.
All right.
Not to mention your New Orleans Saints.
I know. I mean,
Saints don't have a quarterback.
Yeah. Wait, what?
The Saints have a quarterback? Who's the quarterback?
Oh, word? Okay. That's interesting. Because we spent I'm not even trying to get into this. I don't want to get into this.
I ran into that wall that you were about to run through.
And through it,
but I ran into it and bounced back. Oh, I didn't even realize what I just said.
Because when I said Derek Carr was all right, you act like I was being mad disrespectful. I didn't ask who the Saints quarterback was. So just, that wasn't that long ago when you were caping up with Derek Carr trying to put him in your top 10 alongside Russell Wilson. So that's interesting. Who's the Saints quarterback? Okay, noted. As you would say, noted. Thank you very much. Well, Kirk Cousins is in Atlanta. There's a big question as to who the Vikings quarterback is. I just wanted to call your attention to a report that excited me just because I want to be proven right. I want to be proven. You're shaking your head already. I take it you've seen this report that the Vikings may decide if the price isn't right, if a deal can't come together, they may not trade up to draft a quarterback. Hell, they may not even wait to see if a quarterback falls to them. They may run it with Sam Darnold for 2024 and then kick the can down the road and address quarterback in 2025. I'm rooting for this. You know I'm rooting for this. This stems back to, I've always been a Sam Darnold fan. I know what the numbers and even your eyes may tell you, but I chalk that up to this crusade that I'm on to contextualize quarterback's performance or lack thereof. In short, he was with the Jets. And you know, when they drafted your guy, Zach Wilson, I was like, no, keep Sam Darnold. Don't keep, hitting reset. Don't keep blowing in the cartridge and putting it in halfway and resetting the game. Like, stick with Sam Darnold and support him. They didn't do it. They went down that road with Zach Wilson. The rest is history. Now they had Aaron Rodgers. I believe that just as Kyle Shanahan saw something in Sam Darnold after he left Carolina to have him back up Brock Purdy, I think there is something that Kevin O'Connell definitely sees in Sam Darnold. And I see Justin Jefferson on one side. I see Jordan Addison on the other side. I see Aaron Jones in the backfield. I see T.J. Hockenson over the middle. And I see Kevin O'Connell with the play call sheet. I'm rooting for this simply because, as usual, you know, Issa Rae say I'm rooting for everybody black. I'm rooting to be right. I'm rooting to be right. I want to be right about system quarterback soapbox. They're all circumstantial quarterbacks. I want to be right about this. So thank you, Minnesota.
You said,
Kwesi, Kevin, thank you for listening to me.
You almost right.
Sam, you got this.
You were almost right. You said just a minute ago, you said, I see Justin Jefferson. I see Jordan Addison. No, no. You don't see Justin Jefferson. You hear Justin Jefferson. If this is the plan, I'll be listening for Justin Jefferson, and I'll be watching his social media very closely to see what his I'm curious about his movements and his thoughts on social media. It's about to get real cryptic in some cases, or is this going to be overt on his part? I wouldn't blame him for throwing an adult temper tantrum, which I'm a big fan of, and I throw every now and then myself. You mean to tell me that you go from Kirk Cousins to Kirk Cousins being hurt?
You said Kirk Cousins wasn't shit a second ago. You said Kirk wasn't shit. That's what I heard. You said Kirk Cousins and Derek Carr both weren't shit.
He was
that's
in Minnesota before he got hurt. Before he got hurt, he was. Hey, ask Justin Jefferson about his stats. Justin Jefferson put up some historic stats with Kirk Cousins throwing him the football.
Yeah,
so
I know,
oh, I know it was good enough. It ain't about me. It's about what does Jefferson think? Because Kirk Cousins didn't hook me up with historic stats, but he did with Jefferson. So you go from Cousins, then he gets hurt. Then you go to our guy, the Pastrnak, who was doing well for a while, but then got Jefferson back in a hospital with a terrible pass. That Jefferson, all he knows how to do is go for the football. He reaches out to catch it, gets hurt, and re-aggravates an injury. And now you go from there, so from Cousins to Dobbs to Sam Darnold. I'm seeing ghost Sam Darnold, that dude? Okay. Amen. All right, you don't want to win. You don't want to keep franchise players.
If they pay Justin Jefferson, he'll be fine. All they got to do is pay Justin Jefferson. He'll be fine. That's the most pressing issue is paying him. That's the most pressing issue.
And you know what? They probably won't pay him. This is funny how this works. So he'll have a less than stellar season with Sam Darnold at quarterback. And I'm like, hey, you know what's wrong with Justin? You know, receivers tend to break down after a lot of use. And, you know, he ain't the same. No, he's not the same because you gave him Sam Darnold to throw the football to him. So they may not even want to pay him. Yeah, I'm rooting for Justin Jefferson to get out of there. Get up on out of there. They don't know what they're doing. Sam Darnold?
Okay.
Come on.
Well, let me
ask you
this.
You can't do better than that. And you probably should have kept Kirk Cousins in the first place.
And it could be a smokescreen. It could be a smokescreen. What if they went up to, I don't know, the fourth or fifth pick?
To get J.J. McCarthy?
I got J.J. McCarthy. How would you feel about that? How would you feel about J.J. McCarthy? You're in on that?
Better.
Is that something that you'd be interested in?
Maybe right now. Right now, it looks like it could be because you have to speak with all these qualifiers when you're talking about quarterbacks, young quarterbacks in the NFL.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. 2 420-foot vertical speedways, 3 launches.
All right, let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Roger that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at cedarpoint.com.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Darnold was once one of those guys. Sam Darnold was, you know, back of 2018, Sam Darnold was he wasn't quite Caleb Williams, but he was Drake May. He was J.J. McCarthy. He was not quite Jaden Daniels, but he was one of these highly rated quarterbacks, and then he proved himself to be less than. And so now you got a guy who's got higher stock. So J.J. McCarthy's stock is higher. It's higher than everybody's right now, the way he's going. He's got higher stock than Sam Darnold, so that might be a slight upgrade. If you're able to get him to do in Minnesota what he did at the University of Michigan, have him just be there, be a conductor, get the ball to playmakers, don't screw up, make nice high percentage passes, and be a circumstantial system quarterback, it could work. He looks the part, though. That's what a lot of people are falling for, the part. The eye black. Oh, you know, the good looking kid in the pocket. You know, what other cliches? Smart, makes the right plays.
Good on the board.
And we put him on the board. Here's a story. I'm going to tell you a story. Somebody's going to tell this story because they all tell these stories about quarterbacks. Listen, we went out to dinner. No, we were in the room. We were in the room. We went over some concepts. We went out to dinner, and it blew our minds. We came back from dinner, and he just repeated. He regurgitated everything back to us. What great retention. Just a student of the game. Just really understood what we were trying to do. You can tell he's got a high ceiling, and he's got a high floor. Okay.
Michael.
Good luck to you.
Listen.
Good luck to you, Sam Darnold.
I'm sorry. I can't take you seriously because you have absolutely no credibility in this department. You have zero credibility in this conversation. I'm not even sure why I gave you the floor to discuss J.J. McCarthy, because on almost every other subject, I can trust you as being an objective. No, not in this context. No, generally speaking, anything else. Look, I ain't even had to say it. You know.
I know what you're thinking.
Everybody watching know. Fucking Marcellus knew. Everybody knows. Everybody knows.
Hey, man, hail to the
victors. You cannot discuss a Michigan player objectively and impartially and without bias. Like, if J.J. McCarthy looked the part but did so in a different uniform, you'd probably be singing a different tune. You're the same dude that was like all in on Zach Wilson coming out of BYU. Loved him, okay?
Yeah, like, I did.
There's no reason for you to not like J.J. McCarthy other than the fact
I like him. I like J.J. McCarthy. I like him. I mean, like, he's nice. Yeah, I mean, he's a nice quarterback. Everybody knows that. He's a nice quarterback.
But you also know quarterbacks get overdrafted too. Like, what don't you get? Let's get to the heart of it. What don't you get about his rise through this process? Because you know how quarterbacks get overdrafted, generally speaking.
Well, okay, quarterbacks get overdrafted. What I don't understand about his rise is how he rose over some other quarterbacks who might be overdrafted, like Bo Nix, like Michael Penix Jr. I mean, those guys are not being described as top five picks. And in some cases, there's one rumor out there that the Patriots, I mean, lots of rumors. I mean, it's draft time. Everybody's lying. Most people are lying. And playing some kind of games, some kind of shell games. But even the rumor of J.J. McCarthy going to the Patriots at 3, Elliott Wolf supposedly loves him, is going to take him right there at 3. Two spots after Caleb Williams? Wow. It just surprises me. That's what I don't get. I don't get how he rose over some of the others.
Okay. No, that's fair. I get the fascination. I get the intrigue. I mean, you know how these coaches are. And if we get him into our system and our coaching. And I told a story. I love talking about, the Hall of Fame, the late Hall of Fame scout Bill Nunn with the Pittsburgh Steelers. Like, you know, don't tell me what he can't do. That's coaching. But, like, tell me about his tools. Tell me about his athleticism. Tell me about the stuff that we can't teach. And if McCarthy has, he's toolsy. You know, if he's got the arm, if he's got the athleticism, if he's got it from the neck up, but just wasn't necessarily required to display it at Michigan because of the way Jim Harbaugh wanted to play or because of the team around him, because of his circumstances, doesn't mean that a coach can't be convinced into projecting what he could be at the next level, if that makes sense. Because conversely, it's like, look, what's funny is we do both. We overdraft quarterbacks, overhype quarterbacks, overthink quarterbacks, but then on the other hand, start to nitpick quarterbacks. Look, on one hand, you got J.J. McCarthy and, you know, how he checks all these boxes, even though, for the most part, we never saw him do a lot of things at Michigan. Meanwhile, you got Caleb Williams trying to carry an awful defense with a leaky offensive line. And his biggest criticism, and we laughed about this before, is that he may not play in structure. I tend to think, give me a guy who operates well when stuff breaks down off schedule, as they say,
exactly.
As opposed to a guy where things have to be perfect all the time for him to make plays. I'm thinking he could be reined in, and I'm thinking he'll take the easy stuff if it's there. I don't think he's going to look off a wide open DJ Moore or a wide open Keenan Allen or a wide open Cole Kmet and be like, nah, I'm straight. Let me pirouette and, you know, throw across my body just for shits and gigs. You know, like,
yeah,
we overthink quarterbacks in general, in both extremes.
Yeah, and that's really a coaching criticism, isn't it? That's a coaching. Doesn't that sound like your most uptight teacher that you ever had? The dot the I's, cross the T's teacher.
Don't color outside the lines.
Who says?
I needed single space.
Essay should be like this. You got to have the topic sentence here. Paragraph 2 should be for this. Paragraph 4 should be, and you should always end it with in conclusion, comma. And they don't understand a visionary. They don't understand somebody who is a freestyler, but also can do the ordinary stuff. The ordinary stuff at times, and I guess it's a criticism, ordinary stuff is boring to them because they see things that other people don't. So you really criticize a guy for really operating at his highest level when things break down? Most of the time, things will break down. Things will go wrong, coach.
A lot of times, coach, they will. Yeah.
Your scheme, your game plan, by the first quarter, by mid-first quarter, maybe mid-second quarter, what you thought would happen in the game plan is not going to happen.
Right.
See, that whole mentality, and I'm not going to get off on a tangent. I'll just say this really quickly. I think he's learned his lesson since he's won a Super Bowl since then. That whole mentality cost Sean McVay a Super Bowl. A fighting chance at winning a Super Bowl because he thought the Patriots were going to play man. Super Bowl, they scored 3 points. He thought the Patriots were going to play man, and they came out zone. And he had no answers for it. Things broke down. Hey, coach, things broke down. I bet you'd love to have somebody who could go off script right now. Or maybe a coach who could go off script. But, like, As a matter of fact.
In fact, what am I doing on brain detail?
I don't want to hear about players who go off script. Right. Give me a coach who can go off script. Can you go off the script? The coach is always there with the, you know, got the, there it is, you know, reading off the script. Can you go off the script and can you do something when things don't go as planned? That's what I want to see.
I just want to be a fly on the wall for these debates going on in Hallis Hall in Chicago. Where's the Bears facility again? No, it's not Chicago.
Yeah.
You remember where it is?
No, it's not.
No, it's a suburb.
Yeah, yeah.
Suburban
Lake
Chicago.
Forest.
I forget the...
Yeah,
Lake Forest. Thank you. I forget. I was like, what's the suburb? Anyway, so Ryan Poles, Matt Eberflus, they're going to break, you know, the staff up into teams to debate what they should do at number 9. Seems almost a given that they're going to go Caleb Williams at number 1. What should they do at number 9? So they're going to pick sides and debate the best course of action for the organization. I don't know how commonplace this is. I can't say that I've heard of, you know, but obviously resonated with us because what do we do, you know, all the time? Discuss, debate, you know. Point, counterpoint, you know what I mean? So I was kind of interested in that. Because I don't know how much that goes on. Maybe you do. Like I said, you've been a fly on the wall for many a draft meeting and a draft process. Do they just, you know, break off into teams and try to convince the decision makers, you know, the judges, who makes the best argument? Does it really come down to that? Or is this just a healthy exercise? And ultimately, like, Ryan Poles going to do what the hell he want to do anyway. You know?
Right. Now, I think most teams do mock drafts, but knowing Bill Belichick the way you do, can you imagine Belichick sitting here Because he used to call around the horn, around town.
Around the town, yeah.
Yeah. I see you on the around town.
Calling all the horn.
Yeah, yeah.
No, that was my father-in-law, actually.
I see you on the game shows. I see you in the game shows.
Right?
You can imagine Bill Belichick sitting there like, I'm not really much for the hot takes here. The whole debate. It's like, so they do mock drafts, the whole debate. Give me your best English major. Give me your best Model UN alum.
Right.
And then
do they have like an audience? You know, risers
scores,
and podiums and whatnot.
Scores.
Yeah.
Nine. or like poetry. Like,
right.
Love Jones. Woo! Yeah. That was hot. You had it. I don't know if that's it. I don't know what the debate is. I hope that's not real, though. Because what if somebody makes a great debate, but they don't really?
Fun.
Okay, it's fun. But are you gonna make a pick off of that? Now, if you want to be entertained, I like it. But if you're making your pick, does the pick go to the winning debate team?
No, not necessarily. I don't even know. I'm not gonna award you. You're not gonna be the person to call it in and decide who you want to pick. But I think it's empowering. It's very empowering. It's inclusive. It makes people study.
You gotta make sure you study.
Sure they're gonna have some fun with it. Like if they really want to lean in, they'd all go watch Denzel and the Great Debaters, and you know, and they'd all come dressed up, you know, in bow ties and whatnot. You know, they wear glasses even if they don't actually wear glasses. They'd lean into it, you know. But if I were on one side of this, I would be on the side of trade now. Like, could they use another tackle?
Really?
Yes. Yeah, could he use another tackle? Yes. Would another receiver just, you know, put it over the top as Caleb Williams having the best situation, a number one pick arguably has ever walked into? Yes. I think they got four picks total. If they're not trading down from one, if the Panthers pick is not going to be the gift that keeps on giving, I trade down from nine and try to get more picks because that's that area where, you know, people could end up moving up, you know, for a quarterback if they don't get up into the top five. You know, like Minnesota's at 11-23. So like if the top five trade doesn't happen and the Cardinals take Marvin Harrison and the Chargers take Malik Nabers or Brock Bowers or something like that. And then, you know, provided the Giants don't take another quarterback, maybe there's some action at that nine spot for the Bears after the Falcons at eight. Maybe there's some action at that nine spot. So who knows? But I'd be looking to trade down and accumulate more assets. That's the side that I would take for this great debate in Chicago.
Okay. You know, it's really an interesting conversation because as much as we talk about quarterbacks and you just never know, we look at the class of 2021, we've talked about that. Everybody, all those first-round quarterbacks are going to have a new team except for Trevor Lawrence. So he's the star of that class, and which is not saying much. And then 2022, that class is not looking so great either. So we talk a lot about how hard it is to get quarterbacks right.
Yeah.
Tackles are really difficult. First-round tackles in the NFL, you can look at some examples. I'm talking about left tackles, right tackles. I'd make the argument over the last, maybe like last or 10 or 15 years, the best tackle drafted in the last 10 or 15 years in the NFL, and I'm not saying this guy's bad, but it's Lane Johnson. Laramie Tunsil.
Laramie Tunsil certainly.
Or Lane Johnson.
Conversation. Yeah.
Okay. So you got a left tackle.
Hard,
who's really
hard
good,
to top those
Tunsil.
Two.
And then you got a right tackle and Lane Johnson, who went number four. So you had a right tackle who went fourth. And there are a lot of tackles who have gone in the top 10 and the top 15 since then. You know, Stanley with Baltimore, who's a good player, but he was drafted sixth overall, Ronnie Stanley. So you got all these guys. It's hard to get tackle right. So they might be tempted to take a tackle. I wouldn't. You know what I'd do? I'd
more
stop trading down. And here you are. You're finally in a position. You've got Caleb Williams. You've got DJ Moore. You've got Keenan Allen. You've got DeAndre Swift. You know what you could do? You're finally in a position to take the best player available. And the best player available Really? I know you already got Cole Kmet. You already got Gerald Everett.
At a position of need. Oh, you like Bowers? You like Bowers there at nine?
I like the best player. Go ahead and take him.
Yeah.
He's not a tight end.
He's not a tight end.
What would Howie Roseman do?
Howie Roseman? Hey, yeah, he would probably trade up. But yeah, no, I'm with you on best player. I'm with you on best available. And Bowers, to classify Bowers as a tight end does him a disservice. He's another weapon. And Shane Waldron loves his multiple tight end sets.
Imagine.
Yeah.
Imagine.
Brock Bowers in Chicago, it would be like, you know, it's like, you know, for like middle linebackers, whether it's Urlacher or Singletary or Buckus, like he'd be the tight end. He'd be the Ditka. He'd be a modern day Mike Ditka type, you know, eat glass tight end, even though he's not a blocker per se. He's not bad at blocking, but he would be a fan favorite instantly in Chicago.
Chicago deserves this. Chicago, you deserve that. Like with Detroit last year, I felt like Detroit deserved the Super Bowl since they've never been. Detroit and Cleveland deserve to appear in a Super Bowl. Not necessarily. They just deserve that week. They deserve that lead up. They deserve to see that side of NFL, of the NFL. That's heaven for you. Just your team being the focus, being the last two teams standing. So Detroit deserved that because they never had it. But Chicago has never had a great quarterback in the modern era. Since the merger, the Bears have not had a great quarterback. And imagine you get a great quarterback and you get weapons. You get modern weapons.
There's no excuse. Like, right. This dude going to throw for 4,000 yards. If it kills us, at all costs, we will have a 4,000-yard passer in the Chicago Bears uniform. It's happening.
Chicago,
it is happening.
Chicago,
immediately this year.
You not only deserve it, you should demand it. You should demand it. This is what Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus need to do for you. Take the best available player, and that guy sitting there at number nine is probably going to be Brock Bowers. Probably going to be sitting there for you. You got to take him. Take him.
Break the Jets' heart, at least according to the mocks. All right, speaking of breaks, let's take one. We got to dive into these social media streets. As a lot of these players, these kids nowadays, man, they need to stay off their phones. It's just just stay off these things as best you can.
Can't do it. You can't do it. But we can't either.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for less. And for a limited time, new customers receive their second month free when they sign up and use promo code MONTHFREE by May 31st. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Taxes, fees, and other third-party charges will apply. See website for additional details.
You know, I'm fascinated by, like, the process by which things become news and stories. So in a couple of places, I see this headline this morning. Well, last night, but it's getting more pickup this morning about Stephon Diggs chiming in on Twitter, answering a comment to a commentary. So it's like going down a rabbit hole to figure out, like, where did this start? Okay. So RG3 on his podcast, which, by the way, shout out to RG3, love what he's doing. I continue to be amused by the fact that for centuries, not really centuries, but for a long time, people like you and me, Michael, have been told that we just want to be the athletes, when all along they want to be us. And they're doing a great job of it. They're doing a great job of it. RG3 among them. So he's on talking about Stephon Diggs, and he's singing Stephon Diggs' praises and saying how, you know, Josh Allen needs Stephon Diggs. They need to stay together to keep the Bills Super Bowl window open, and how much better Allen has made Diggs Diggs hasn't made Allen, I beg your pardon, since his arrival, which everybody knows that. That's no secret. That's not a hot take. So the Pinky Pirate chimes in. The Pinky Pirate is somebody on social media.
Pinky Pirate.
Does Josh benefit from having a top-tier receiver? Yes. Is he essential to his success, as RG3 suggested? No. And then Diggs chimes in and says, you sure? Now, I'm going to bet. I haven't combed through Stephon Diggs' follows, but I'm going to bet that Stephon Diggs looked at the video and then subjected himself to scrolling through the comments in a reaction to said video. Okay?
Yeah.
And decided to say, you sure? Which, two things. One, why Stephon? Like, I mean, I get it. Yeah. It's a habit, and you know they've all grown up with social media. It's like you don't need to dignify the Pinky Pirate's take with your response, and like you know what you mean to that organization. Even though down the stretch he didn't seem to mean much. I mean, I think he had 3 catches against the Chiefs, and his last 100-yard game was Week 6. Holy shit!
It's funny.
Holy shit!
It's funny that you were saying that, right?
Shit.
How about that?
Okay, wait, first of all, hold on, Gary. What is your source? Where are you seeing this?
Let's just make sure it's the real one.
We're not getting trolled. Adam Schefter.
Let's check the spelling.
Okay, yeah, right, exactly. This is not a... Well, yeah. It's the same avatar as him and Mort, rest in peace. Same avatar. Yeah. 4-time Pro Bowl wide receiver to the Houston Texans for draft pick compensation. Oh, my God. I love it when stuff happens in real time. Sorry, Pinky Pirate. Your 15 minutes of fame are up. Stephon Diggs with the Texans. Oh, my goodness. Whoo.
So,
since I'm a degenerate, wow. I have to get this off. My pick of C.J. Stroud as the 3rd pick in our Dynasty Startup Draft looks even better. Okay, but now I'm not to make it about me. The league has problems right now. There's a lot to unpack here. All right, you want to take it from the Texans side first or the Bills side?
Well, let's start with the Bills because the Texans side.
All right, let's start with the Bills.
Texans are good.
Well, wait, hold on. Okay, let's close the loop. Let's close the Pinky Pirate loop. Clearly, the answer is no. the Bills do not deem Stephon Diggs to be essential to the success of Josh Allen. Clearly, they do. Okay, they were on the side of the Pinky Pirate. No, he is not essential because the Bills, after marginalizing Stephon Diggs down the stretch, once Joe Brady took over. Stephon Diggs disappeared last year, have now sent him to Houston. So we got our answer. All right, take it from the Bills side.
Well, but if you're Josh Allen right now, let's start with Josh Allen. Right now, you got some issues with Brandon Bean and Sean McDermott. You really do. Because your top two receivers from last year are gone. Gabe Davis off to Jacksonville, Stephon Diggs off to Houston, and all you've got to show for it is a T-shirt and some draft picks. So as a
Khalil Shakir to the moon. Sorry, I'm in dynasty mode.
We're familiar with his work. I told you. Anyway, but I'd be upset if I'm Josh Allen. Now for Stephon Diggs, does this make us all right? Can we stop the BS, Buffalo? And this is for you, Diggs, and for you, Allen, and for you, McDermott, and everybody else. Can we stop it? We were right the entire time, right? He was not happy when his brother said, you got to get you up out of there.
Right.
And all kinds of stuff.
And he didn't show up to the facility.
And his walkout. And all kinds of stuff. Yeah, it was a problem. Yeah. See, I can't stand. You talk about the athletes doing a great job, but nobody has done a good job of doing what we do and just keeping it a buck. Yeah, right. Keep it a buck.
No, when they cover themselves,
just saying,
dude, they cover
happy,
things
up. Wasn't happy.
When they cover themselves, they can cover things up. Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, stop. Like, can we stop lying now? We can be real. And all the stories gonna come out now. All the stories, the same people who said, oh, the national media making it up, and hey, you don't understand Buffalo. Now the stories, check the Buffalo News, all the inside the demise of the Stephon Diggs, Josh Allen relationship, inside the demise, and Diggs is going to be from go from being a good guy to being selfish, and he wanted the money, and he wanted more credit. Anyway, so that's over in Buffalo. But Buffalo's got some problems now because that dude's a dog. He's a
he's a very good player. But you just laid out
he's more than a very good player.
Okay,
he's more than a very good player.
Okay, great. Okay, whatever. He's one of the best receivers in the NFL. I'm saying you just laid out all the issues that they've had. Now those issues are resolved. Go be great somewhere else, as we like to say here on this show. Like, if you're Josh Allen, are you really upset? To the Peaky Pirates point, are you really – is Stephon Diggs essential? Yes, the trajectory of Josh Allen's career changed when Brian Daboll and company fixed his mechanics coming out of Wyoming, and he got Stephon Diggs, and other teams have copied that.
And
we talked
both
about
gone.
It. Getting that top-notch receiver, whether it's A.J. Brown in Philadelphia or Stephon Diggs – in Buffalo, it's like that accelerates the growth of your young quarterback. But if I'm Josh Allen, hell, maybe I'm tired of having to find ways to spin the drama that's going on behind the scenes. Because maybe that's just the tip of the iceberg that we're hearing. And so you have Khalil Shakir. You have Dalton Kincaid. You just signed Curtis Samuel. I mean, listen, I'm not suggesting that Josh Allen can necessarily replicate what Patrick Mahomes did once they traded Tyreek Hill. There's precedence for trading a great receiver and watching the quarterback thrive without him, but it's possible. And it's the deepest receiver class in recent memory. Like, a lot of people were already mocking a receiver. Gabe Davis was a blocker. Like, they didn't utilize Gabe Davis properly. He was a great team guy, great locker room guy, but they didn't utilize Gabe Davis as a receiver outside of that 4-touchdown game he had in the playoffs against the Chiefs. So I don't remember. It was very inconsistent. Very inconsistent. He had his moments, but very inconsistent participation.
Can I ask you real quick?
You got Josh Allen. Draft one of these dog receivers in this draft, or one or two of them, and move on without the headache of a guy, again, talented, but who was clearly high maintenance. Like, I don't think Josh Allen should be pissed off by this at all. I think he should be relieved.
Can I ask you a question? Because I personally like old houses. If the house wasn't built, if it ain't got an 18 in front of it, 1800 something, I really don't like. I like old houses, so I like those old windows, like the bay windows, and like they're a little drafty, and they got the wavy glass in there, and old school. And some people like the new windows. Whatever window you like, though, Michael Smith, you have to acknowledge the window is closing. Maybe it's closed in Buffalo. It's closed. It's over.
To quote, we're going here again. We know how popular you are in Buffalo. Burrow,
they know it.
The window is
they
my
don't know
career.
That.
The window is
they,
my career,
listen,
to quote Joe Burrow.
They don't
as
know
long
that
as Josh
now.
Allen is there, as long as Josh Allen is there, they have the ability to be a playoff team. And if they're in the playoffs, quote Raheem Morris, you don't know what the fuck could happen. Well, in Buffalo,
we
they kind of do.
But they do.
That's so true.
It's over.
Anyway, let's have some fun.
Let's talk about the transfer, though. There's a transfer. Buffalo going down, and Houston's a problem. Texans.
First of all,
rising.
Houston sports, basketball, the NFL, like just Houston sports in general. No, man, listen, this is great for C.J. Stroud, great for Houston. They kept their offensive coordinator, Bobby Slowick. He was supposed to be like a head coaching candidate. They kept him. Tank Dell's coming back healthy. They re-signed Dalton Schultz, Nico Collins. They got Joe Mixon. Bro, they're going to be scary on offense. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about what D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caserio did to remake that defense in D'Amico Ryans' image. Bro, Houston was already coming. They're here now. Provided that, like, Tank Dell and Nico Collins had a great season. Provided that Stephon Diggs goes in there with the right attitude and he's not a problem for Houston, bruh, he got somebody who won't get in the ball and get in the ball where he wants it in T.J. Stroud, for sure.
Can I tell you the terms of this trade?
You just got what, second rounder in 25, right? Second rounder in 25. What else?
A 2025 second round pick going to Buffalo.
And they're giving a fifth and 25. So they're giving them picks to get it. Okay. So you want to answer that question again?
Oh,
Josh Allen
man.
Should be upset.
Okay.
Clearly they couldn't get him out of Dodge fast enough. Will they rule this day? They might. But that says, like, you know what? We want to facilitate this trade. This isn't quite the Broncos paying Russell Wilson to play for the Steelers. But this is like, hey, man, you know what? We want this 25 seconds so bad. Take the six-rounder this year and his fifth next year.
Isn't that what the realtors tell you? Hey, can we get a deal? Well, all I can tell you is that the seller's ready. You know you're about to get a deal when they say that. It's time. The seller thinks it's time.
Wow.
Yeah, get this out of here. So look, Stephon Diggs is probably a pain in the ass. Okay, and both things can be true. I'm sure he was a pain. We saw
I'm
him
a pain
sideline.
In the ass. But I'm
not this year.
I will never criticize somebody for being a pain in the ass. If you know what I'm saying. If you're good, you make exceptions for exceptional people. If you're good enough,
that's right.
You know, there you go.
Now,
I'm good with that.
Not this year's playoff loss. Not the playoff loss to Kansas City at home. But the playoff loss at home in the snow, in Western New York, Buffalo, in the snow. You get pushed around in the snow, but Stephon Diggs was losing his mind on the sideline then. And so I'm sure it's been going on for a long time. But you know what?
This relationship
I'll
ran
bet
its course.
You. Hey, okay. But Mike, do you think this is something, it's just like a habit he suddenly developed? Or do you think when they went to Kansas City and they thought they were going to win the game and 13 seconds left on the clock, do you think Stephon Diggs that season, do you think he was a pain in the ass that season? I bet he was. I mean, anyway,
sure.
So I'm not sure, it's cause and effect. He's a pain, and therefore
I'm not blaming him for their demise at all. But look, you said you like old houses. I have a rule when it comes to closets and attics. If I ain't using it, I probably don't need it. So if we cleaning stuff out, I'm throwing it away. I'm not looking through it, being like, "Oh, should I keep
I like
this?"
That.
Like if I haven't thought about it, I clearly it must not be important. Stephon Diggs was an afterthought down the stretch of last season and in the playoffs. So if you ain't going to throw him the ball, send him to somebody who will. You want the last word on this one?
I was just say just very quickly on this, Mike. So this is what's happened the last, in less than a year. Less than a year in Buffalo.
Oh, you still
Sean
waiting
McDermott,
off Buffalo?
Yeah. I just want to point out
yeah.
because this is it. This is it for him. This is it right here, this year, for McDermott. Got to do something or he's out.
Yeah.
I'm telling you. He's gotten rid of his offensive coordinator. O coordinator's gone. D coordinator's gone.
Ken Dorsey's gone. Leslie Frazier went before that. Yeah.
And so Ken Dorsey, Leslie Frazier, and now Stephon Diggs.
To say nothing of the exodus they had on. A lot of veteran guys departed for salary cap reasons on defense. So it's a makeover.
Okay, but I'm talking about these are major
right,
figures
guys.
In the organization.
Sure.
Your number one guy on offense gone. Your number one guy on defense gone. Your number one wide receiver gone. You're not going to get rid of Josh Allen. This is on you and Bean. If the team, if they just make the playoffs, as you said, they can still make the playoffs. So they make the playoffs this
enough.
Year and they lose.
No, that's not enough.
See you later.
They got to find a way to take advantage of Josh Allen's window. I want to see what they do in the draft now. I want to see which receiver they end up with in the draft because they're going to get one. And Khalil Shakir was really good. Like, dynasty references aside, Khalil Shakir is a really good player for them. Is he a one? I don't think – no, he's not a guy that you could see stepping into the shoes of Stephon Diggs. But among Shakir,
I sure hope so.
Kincaid, Samuel – yeah, I told you you're going to get hooked on that narcotic. All right, I love how that started. It started with, like,
damn,
had
man.
No idea where this was damn. Going. This was just, you know, like, but once recording in the morning paid off, because, like, wow. Never know what a day is going to bring. We were talking about Stephon Diggs questioning whether or not, or responding to the question of whether or not he was essential to Josh Allen's success. Well, he got his answer. Meanwhile, this was something, on a related note, this was something I saw last week I wanted to bring up. So Kevin Durant got booed in his return to Oklahoma City. And a fan, and Kevin Durant always got time on social media, a fan commented on social media saying, isn't that a shame? Kevin Durant, you know, nobody respects his rings, and he's a man without a home. And then Durant responded, again, he always got time, he always in the comment section, responded, I'm at home everywhere I go. Mm. And it got me to thinking, I'm like, can somebody be a GOAT and a journeyman at the same time? Because it's like, wait, is Kevin Durant, like, if OKC, and the fans in OKC are still holding a grudge, he didn't do enough in Brooklyn to, you know, be on the mural with Biggie and Jay-Z. I mean, like, I don't think Brooklyn claims him. You know, the Suns, he just got there, and they haven't done anything to speak of.
The Warriors.
Well, I'm going to get to the Warriors in a second. Because he should be
thanking him, but they don't.
Kevin Durant feels like that ex that person that his ex ain't claiming. Like, oh, I ain't go out with him. Like, oh, no. She ain't on my ledger. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like I ain't claiming that body. My body count does not include that person. That's what it feels like. But I figure when it comes to the Warriors specifically, of course, and just social media activity in general. That's a young looking KD. Who better to ask than Natalie? As we get into this week's edition of the comment section. Who better to ask than Natalie Esquire, just how Warriors fans, how they really feel about Kevin Durant. Because the guy on social said, you know, that he's a person without a home. Well, would the Warriors let KD crash on the couch? Like, could he stay over, you know? If he needed a place to crash, so how does the Warriors fan base view Kevin Durant? Like, people always assign an asterisk next to his rings, Natalie, but is he truly not welcomed? Do y'all not appreciate KD? Like, if you could speak on behalf of an entire fan base, I know that's a lot. It's like saying speak on behalf of all Black people. You're not a monolith, but if you could speak on behalf of the Warriors fan base, like, how is KD viewed? Does he have a home in the Bay Area?
I mean, I guess it depends on who you ask. Like, I think there are people all the time who say Warriors fans don't appreciate him, but Warriors fans are not who are reflected on Twitter. Like, I think people need to remember Twitter does not reflect what the Bay feels in an entire fan base. And also, you know, a lot of the people who are tweeting are not actually Warriors fans. They are a Stephen Curry stan. Like, they're just a fan of a player. So a lot of that commentary, when you see it being somewhat critical of Kevin Durant, mm-hmm. they're not necessarily Warriors fans. Mm-hmm. Kevin Durant is welcome in the Bay. The Warriors organization does respect him and show him love. So
so he might retire his jersey one day.
I don't know. They probably will. I think there's a case for it. But, you know, whether he can be a GOAT, he is a GOAT. He's not the GOAT, right. And he won't ever be considered the GOAT, not because he's a journeyman, but just because his resume doesn't dictate, you know, that he is. I mean, that's really all it is.
But I'm saying, I mean, he's one of the GOAT scorers, but I'm saying, like, you know, when you think of a journeyman, you don't think of a player at that level, even this though, good. Like, but conversely,
right. James.
But
you think,
but Shaq, well, but it's what I was about to say, but LeBron James, while he's played for several teams, they claim him. Right. And I think he's it doesn't seem like he's had this endless search for credibility or respect that Kevin Durant seems to be on. That's why I say he's like a samurai without a mask.
LeBron
almost.
First left the Cavaliers.
Shaquille O'Neal. Well, no, but true. But he found success in Miami.
Right.
And then he went back to Cleveland and then he went to L.A. He's now embraced by all his fan bases. Shaq just got his number retired at long last by Orlando. So there are individuals who have changed teams, but unlike Kevin Durant, it feels like all of those teams claim him and celebrate him. I guess it just was jarring to see OKC still booing him after all this time, and that's why I wondered how the Warriors felt, because I don't think Brooklyn and Phoenix count.
Yeah. And here's the other thing. Would you take him back, Natalie? Would you walk down the aisle with this man again? With this man, let's get remarried. Some couples do that. They get remarried. They break up and they get remarried. Would you do it?
I don't think Kevin Durant should come back, but that's just because there was a lot that came with him. You know, like it was just a lot. So yes, they won. And if people think that's enough, like the fact that they could win, and usually it is, right? That's why they tolerate Draymond Green. Then sure, you bring him back, but he just, a lot comes with KD, right? Like that was reported and that was not reported. And so while they won, it wasn't always the easiest situation, you know? And so you have to decide whether that's worth it to you. Kevin Durant is getting older. So I don't know that you want to bring back someone else who's aging, even if it's someone who is the caliber of Kevin Durant, because now you're dealing with Steph aging, you're dealing with Draymond, you're dealing with Klay, you're dealing with Kevin Durant. I don't even know who would be left, like if you could even keep all of them. But I'm just saying, you know, like hypothetically, I don't even know if that makes sense. So I do think Kevin Durant is loved and appreciated for what he did for the Warriors. But I don't, like OKC, I just don't think it's any shock that they're still booing him. He didn't leave on good terms. He, you know,
thought time healed all wounds, you know?
No, I mean, like if you leave an organization dirty, if LeBron did not go back to Cleveland, I don't think that they would be showing him love either. Like the way you depart a situation matters. And if you offend people on the way out, then like you're not going to be this beloved person.
Right. And all rings are not created equal. I've already talked about the fact that, like, there are people with no rings or fewer rings who have more respect for a variety of reasons than KD. But we'll leave that there. Speaking of the comments, we know you deep in these social media streets. What are the brother from another viewers fired up about based on our last couple of shows' conversations?
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hey everyone, it's Ted from Consumer Cellular, the guy in the orange sweater, and this is your wake-up call. If you're paying too much for wireless service, you don't have to keep having that nightmare. Consumer Cellular has the same fast, reliable coverage as the leading carriers for up to half the cost. So why keep spending more than you have to? Seriously, wake up and call 1-888-FREEDOM or visit ConsumerCellular.com.
Savings based on cost of Consumer Cellular single line 1, 5, and 10 gig data plans with unlimited talk and text compared to lowest cost single line postpaid unlimited talk, text, and data plans offered by T-Mobile and Verizon January 2024.
I mean, there's a variety of things, but, you know, Kim Mulkey always gets people fired up. But, you know, obviously LSU is out. They lost in the Elite Eight. But we spoke about the LA Times article that came out about the team before that game. And so a lot of people had a lot of thoughts about that commentary. And I thought one of the interesting comments was someone basically kind of wanting us to dial down the praise, and not just us, but in general, the praise being doled out to Kim Mulkey, because, you know, in a way it was almost
the praise for maybe, her LA Times reaction.
For her calling out the LA Times article, because in a way, like, while she was right and it was sexism and she was right to call it out, it almost in a way made you forget, or makes people forget or overlook all the things that the Washington Post article laid out in terms of, like, her other, you know, things that you'd find controversial about her as a coach. So I just don't like how this has basically buried the Washington Post article. Mulkey's homophobia should not be getting a pass. I agree with this, though. And personally, I do think that, like, the level of praise she was being given is, like, Kim Mulkey did the easy part. Like, she called out sexism. It's not that hard to call out sexism, and it's pretty blatant. Haley Van Lith did the harder part, And that was call out the racism, and that was be an ally. And as far as Kim Mulkey is concerned, it's been one of my main criticisms of her, which is that she does not protect her players. And I don't look at what she did that day by calling out the sexism. I feel like that was easy to do. And I'm not saying that she shouldn't be acknowledged for that, but she's also done a lot in the past. We know Brittany Griner has written about it. Other players have tweeted about it. Like, she's done other harmful things for, you know, towards her players. And in particular, a player right now, Angel Reese, who is the subject of so much scrutiny right now. Like, I don't think Kim Mulkey has ever done a great job of protecting her. Ever. Not ever. And I want to, you know, I know we got to, I want to pass the ball to you guys, but I just want to say, I just want to say this one thing really quickly, because this is really important when I say, like, she hasn't protected her players. Angel Reese, after the game, was asked a question and she responded about all the things that she has experienced being sexualized. And so people are clear that's because someone made AI porn about her. So when people come and they say, oh, well, she gets on the web and she has pictures wearing certain clothes. When she says she's sexualized, she's referring to AI porn being made about her. She said she has received death threats. She said that, you know, she went on. She said she has not had peace. She has not experienced peace since they won the last title. And that's a very important thing. And this is something the social media streets are talking about. Everybody is talking about this. This morning, Taylor Rooks put out a tweet this morning that had me in tears. I had to compose myself to get on this show because Haley Van Lith and Flauge were her teammates that got on the podium and protected her. Her coach did not. So I personally was not a fan, like this commenter, of all of the Kim Mulkey praise, because to me, the hard thing was to protect Angel Reese. The thing to do was to be an ally to your Black players at that time and call out the racism. And earlier in the year, you didn't protect Angel Reese. When things were swarming around her and people were making rumors, you did not. That's the part that I want to challenge Kim Mulkey to do and to protect her players. Calling out the sexism, that was easy.
So I hear you, Natalie. Like, I'm not arguing with most of what you said. Just before the record, like, those things are mutually exclusive. It's like, right. Nobody was saying Kim Mulkey's a hero, at least not on this show. And I don't know. For like, sure. we gotta stop this thing.
Where's
like,
this
shit really pisses me off. It pisses me off when somebody like has this straw, where this straw man or this red herring or this like this boogie, like there ain't nobody out here like throwing a parade for Kim Mulkey. The entire conversation.
Not you guys, but it was.
I think okay. Okay, I'm sure they were. If you dig deep enough, if you go into your non-follower direct messages, if you go into the comment section deep enough, I'm sure you will find people saying great job calling it out. And you're right. Stating the obvious is not hard. You're absolutely right. And you're right that there's an inconsistency here, an upsetting and disturbing inconsistency here, where she doesn't quote unquote keep that same energy. But like, yo, it does, we ain't got to shoot the messenger. We can have a problem with Kim Mulkey. And like we start off by saying, when you're right, you're right. The conversation was never Kim Mulkey called out something that nobody else saw. The conversation was about the article. And so we're going to have weekly conversations or daily conversations about challenging the coverage disparity. It doesn't matter who said it. It doesn't matter who said it. So, yes, you're right about Kim Mulkey and how and her failure to protect, in particular, Angel Reese, or before her, Brittany Griner. Nobody's forgetting the Washington Post article. But the LA Times article was so egregious and extreme that whether Kim Mulkey had said it or not, plenty of people would have responded to the LA Times article that way. So I agree with what you're saying in terms of Kim Mulkey not keeping that same energy. I simply disagree with the generalization that Kim Mulkey was being hailed as some kind of a hero because she stated the obvious when it wasn't about Kim Mulkey. She was the jumping off point and the soundbite that we played, but ultimately it was offensive to everybody and should have been offensive to everybody because of the ongoing conversations about coverage around women's basketball that we've talked about. Michael, I'm sorry, I don't want to take up all the time. Go ahead, Michael.
No, 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 no. I don't think that person's comment was specifically about you and specifically about our section. And so I don't think it's being conflated across
social. Well, they put it on our, you, but they put it, and as they you put mentioned, it on our comments.
Because
they put it
on I think our page. What, because we're one of many people talking about it. And I think the general sentiment, and I saw it across social.
General.
It wasn't just like a, right. It wasn't just the one thing, is that because of a lot of this praise, remember, a lot of people are new here. Everyone doesn't know about Kim Mulkey. I saw lots of tweets of people saying she's a liberal. Kim Mulkey. So what I'm saying is,
well, yeah,
yes,
but Natalie, some people are stupid, and some people can't think of two things at the same time.
But also,
some people can't handle two things at the same time.
Some people are
new
to Kim Mulkey. A lot of the things that were laid out in that article from the Washington Post, they don't know about Kim Mulkey. So you are informed. Right. But this idea that the general public knows her and knows about what happened in the past, a lot of people don't, Mike. And so all I'm saying is that when that person's saying it, it's like, it bothers some people because it's just like, well, great, now she's receiving all this praise. And so people are kind of forgetting, or they don't really know what kind of person
it bothers people because they don't fuck with Kim Mulkey. That's what it is. And rightfully so, and understandably so. But like ultimately, like somebody that has been wrong on a lot of levels can be right once in a while. And if you're right, again, if you're right, exactly. You're right. Like we can do this all day. If we can conveniently find people to support our point or support our position on somebody if we dig hard enough. Like, yeah, sure. There's a lot of people probably praising her that don't know.
That's what I'm trying to tell you. You're making it seem like it's digging. You
the
don't
information
have to dig. It's
is
out there.
There.
This is the conversation.
Fine. A lot of shit's out there is my point. That's the danger of the comment section and the danger of social media. A lot of people are saying uninformed, dumb shit. It doesn't mean that you're saying that a lot of people don't know about Kim Mulkey. I'm saying a lot of people do. And there's a lot of written information supporting Kim Mulkey's problematic behavior over her career. The Washington Post got a whole lot of clicks and a lot of people had it right there laid out in front of her to read it. And most of us are capable of consuming two things, a right observation about what was problematic about the LA Times article and Kim Mulkey, that's some messed up stuff you did and continue to do to your point, Natalie. Go ahead, Michael. I said I was going to let
you
go.
Yeah, no, I'm just going to say just quickly, because you guys have both made some excellent points. The way I looked at Kim Mulkey in the LA Times is that Kim Mulkey, just like she did when she played for Louisiana Tech back in the day, Kim Mulkey was a point guard. She was a point guard who threw it. She threw the pass somewhere else. So she threw that pass to the LA Times coverage or bad coverage of that UCLA-LSU game. And so I never looked at it as, hey, thank you, Kim Mulkey, for pointing that out. Maybe the journalist in me focused more on LA Times. What the hell are you doing? How is that the article?
Yeah.
So it never even crossed my mind. I'm so thankful and grateful for
most
Kim Mulkey and standing up for young women. No, I didn't think that. I thought it started the conversation. And so she was right to start the conversation there. But as Mike said, look, we're capable when we want to of going back to the past and staying in the present. That's why we mentioned Kevin Durant. People still haven't forgotten that Kevin Durant, despite what he does now, they haven't forgotten Kevin Durant in OKC. They haven't forgotten Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. They haven't forgotten Kevin Durant at times at Golden State, but they see him with the Phoenix Suns. We're able to look at what somebody's doing now and what they've done in the past and make an informed comment about it. So why can't we do that in the same weekend? But hold on. It's the same weekend.
Yes.
You had the Washington Post and LA Times in the same weekend. Focus on
it's not hard.
But also, Natalie,
what
is the agenda? What is the agenda, too? It's like, I don't think it's just ignorance. I don't think it's just ignorance when you say a lot of people aren't familiar with Kim Mulkey's body of work. I don't think it's just ignorance. What is the agenda on the part of the people that you're seeing who are praising Kim Mulkey? Like, where are they coming from? You know, so I don't know if it's just ignorance.
Yeah, the praise doesn't have to be like she's the best person in the world. All I'm saying is that, first of all, we know that in today's day, when I say we know because there's been studies on this, people read less. So we can say all the information's out there. People read less. They don't even like to read a long text. They don't even like to read a long tweet.
It's a long ass article.
So that's that. But we also know for a fact that women's basketball is on the rise, and there are a lot of
12.3 million viewers.
Yes, there are a lot of new people coming in. So we cannot just take
ever.
we cannot just make assumptions that people know about Kim Mulkey. A lot of people don't know about her. As many people who may, there is many who don't. And what I'm saying is, in the divisive times that we live in now, right, when people see that and they see her calling out the LA Times for the you know, for sexism, for a part of the world, whatever their agenda is, they were like, oh, she's a liberal, she's this, she's that, which we know is not true about Kim Mulkey, but a lot of people are new here. And for some people, including myself, it just felt like it wasn't an overpraising of her. It was more like, great, now that she did this thing that is good, which should be acknowledged because she did the right thing, and there's so much conversation around it, it can make people overlook the great profile that just came out from the Washington Post that details her history. And that's my only point. It wasn't about whether two things can be true or what you guys' individual opinions are.
Your concern. I'm saying the effect that it had. I appreciate your concern. I think it's a stretch, respectfully. I think it's a stretch.
Okay. Based on what I'm seeing in commentary, that's what the conversation is.
That's fine. The comment section is toxic. We're wading in toxic waters. Okay.
I'm not just talking about our comment section. I'm just saying the conversation happening on social media
in general is toxic. Social media in general is toxic. That's why I say, like, don't go digging in your DMs for anybody that's listening. Don't go digging in your DMs, Mike.
That's all I'm saying.
I'm not talking to you. I'm saying for people that's listening, don't go digging in your DMs that people don't follow you, because you never know what you might find for people that are not inclined to play nice in social media. That's just an aside. I'm just speaking to how toxic social media is and can be in general. And as you said at the very beginning, talking about the Warriors, it's not real. It's not real life. Okay. Like, it is not an accurate representation of universal opinion. And so while there may be some people who apparently don't pay attention to women's basketball and don't know about Kim Mulkey, but came out of the woodworks because they happen to be interested in a story about the LA Times calling LSU players dirty debutantes, and they just happen to come up from outer space and just decide to praise Kim Mulkey as a liberal, sure, there are some of those people. But to me, it is a stretch, respectfully. I'm not saying you're not seeing what you're seeing, because you're seeing it. It is a stretch to think that her stating the obvious, saying that water's wet, sky is blue, and that article was sexist, overshadows who she has been for 40 years. Or that people are forgetting it or not giving it its due attention. I don't think that's where we are. I hope that's not where we are. Maybe I'm being naive. I hope that's not where we are. But more than one thing can be true. More than one thing can be true. I hope.
For sure.
I hope we're sophisticated enough to balance those two things. But
for sure.
Nonetheless, 12.3 million viewers, even though these might be some toxic conversations, I think it's clear who's running the show right now in the world of sports. Most watched. We knew it was going to challenge the national championship game. We knew it was going to challenge that. But some of the stats around this game, it outdrew, check this out, 12.3 million viewers, I'm sure you already know this, most watched women's college basketball game ever, outdrew every 2023 college football game outside of the football playoff, Ohio State, wow, Michigan, and SEC title game. ESPN's second largest audience for any basketball game, men or women, since 2012. I mean, just ridiculous figures across the board. More than every NBA game last season outside of game 5 of the finals, and every Major League Baseball game last season in all but 5 of college football's matchups, as I mentioned. And I don't think that's just Caitlin Clark. I mean, obviously, women's basketball. In that game, it was. That game was Caitlin Clark, Angel Reese, Kim Mulkey, the rivalry, the rematch. But generally speaking, this game's in a good place. And the star power is going to carry it beyond Caitlin Clark's departure to the WNBA. Natalie, you want one last word on just what we witnessed on Monday night before we go?
Yeah, I just actually think that with the ratings, I expected the ratings to be great for that game. So it's a huge win for women's basketball. But I'm actually more impressed with the 6.7 million that also stayed back to watch UConn and USC, because that would have actually been a high before these recent records that just break, that would have been a high. And that's also the other games. South Carolina, who was facing an opponent, maybe who, you know, in Colorado State that people weren't as excited about, still did like over 3 million on ABC. And so all of the ratings have been really great for women's basketball. And it's showing that it's not only about one single player, it's about multiple players. And of course, obviously everyone wants like the big number, the 12 number, but being in the later time slot on cable TV and to still pull 6.7 million. And that shows you that people are tapped in, they're dialed in, and we should invest more and continue to talk about women's basketball and promote it and highlight it.
I love that.
That 12.3 might be temporary, Michael.
It's going up. I mean,
that national championship game about, in South Carolina.
It's the nexus of so many things. I was going to say culmination, but the culmination suggests an ending. I'm just going to say it's the nexus of so many great things happening in women's college basketball. You think about identifiable characters on the court and off the court. So Kim Mulkey, lover or hater, Kim Mulkey is a part of that mix. Dawn Staley is a part of that mix. Geno Auriemma is a part of that mix. Look at the players. Paige Beckers, you got Juju, you got Caitlin Clark, you got Angel Reese. And you've got players, you actually have some parity to a degree in college basketball where, I don't know, South Carolina's undefeated, but if South Carolina plays Iowa in the national championship, I don't know. South Carolina is, and they're undefeated, but they're not blowing away everybody. They've had a couple of close calls this year in the tournament and in the SEC tournament where they could have gone down. And here's the other good thing, and don't take this the wrong way, because we would never, no one here would ever celebrate somebody being fired. But you think about the standard in college basketball now. Tennessee used to be the program before UConn took over. So Tennessee, I think, was after Louisiana Tech. It was Louisiana Tech, then Tennessee, then UConn. And so, you know, Pat Summitt passed about 8 years ago. And after Pat Summitt, they're now going to be on their third coach post-Pat Summitt. And the reason they're on their third coach now is because the standard is not good enough for them. They want to be in this conversation. And Tennessee is now like a Sweet 16 kind of team, but they're not a national championship contender. So the coach they just moved on from had a fantastic record and went to the NCAAs four times and is a former volunteer, but not good enough. I think it's bad for her, and I don't want to celebrate her losing her job, but it's good for women's basketball
that shows. Yeah.
These programs are saying, oh, no, we want to be up there. We want to be in that conversation.
Right.
It's now South Carolina, so we've moved from UConn to now it being about South Carolina.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, whatever matchup
doesn't
we get,
really seem to be getting the praise they deserve for being an undefeated team, being the team that's gone to the last four Final Fours, losing three games in the total of the last 3 years. There's just not enough talk about Dawn Staley and South Carolina. There seems to be this presumption we're just focusing on the other teams.
But to be fair, I know we ain't got time.
Whoever they,
but to be fair, you get that. You get that constant stream of conversation and praise when you stack up multiples. When you start, I mean, I'm talking about like five.
Two?
But like two Tennessee. But no, two. But two. Think about how many did Pat Summitt have? How many does Geno have? And I ride for Dawn Staley. I love Dawn Staley. But you get that praise in women's basketball when you're a dynasty. Is South Carolina, they didn't win it last year. LSU
no, they
won
didn't.
It.
They were still
LSU.
In the title game. They were still in the title game.
Yeah, but
think it's just about that. But conversation for another day. I think
the
that
preeminent
if
program
a different coach
in,
was
in
doing that,
basketball.
They'd be getting the praise.
They're the preeminent program in women's college basketball. And whoever they play in the national title game, no disrespect to NC State, whoever they play in the national title game, I'm going to go out on a limb and say it will eclipse 12.3. Million. Mm. It may not have the same tension as LSU Iowa did with Angel and Caitlin, of course, But I think whether it's Paige or
if
Caitlin versus
North Carolina,
if it's Caitlin,
North Carolina, Iowa is going to be
even home. Even if it's UConn, I think it may not eclipse it, but it'll be a lot of eyeballs if it's Geno versus Dawn and Paige.
Absolutely,
versus,
it absolutely will.
South Carolina, hey. Iowa is going to give us $15 million. We get 15.
That's a good number. All I know is y'all, I'm just doing what I can so God can do what I can. That's all I know. So that was my favorite moment.
That was
my favorite moment of the whole weekend. if Shane put that on a shirt or hoodie, like somebody hook us up with that.
Paige right. is our girl.
Thanks, Nat. Y'all take it easy.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed, also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to keepitfunohio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.